from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. Here we are on location today.
This is the MLU break room?
Yeah, we're on location, like two rooms away from our normal location. I'm feeling unsettled.
It's almost like you'd be hallucinating something, like a tiger hat.
Yeah, it's that might be what's unsettling me.
You're going to have to pretend it's not there.
We're going to ignore the tiger hat for now. We'll get to the tiger hat. We'll get to the reason why we're on location. But for now, we have to start with an
something
introduction.
Very important.
Very important. An introduction of our new sponsor.
Yeah.
Heavy Seas Brewing Company.
Heavy
out
Seas
of Baltimore.
Brewing. Yeah. I live down in Maryland now, so yeah. I actually drink a decent amount of their beers as a beer drinker myself. I wasn't sure which part of Maryland they were from, but Baltimore seems to be
right
where.
In Baltimore. Baltimore's the place. So Heavy Seas, great company, great beer, and we're going to get to that beer in a minute. You can see it right there. But founded by Hugh Sisson. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but I think I am. And I found a good story about him on their website when I was looking at it. So Hugh founded the company, but he started, he was going to be an actor. Mm-hmm. It was one of his things. He wanted to be an actor. He was going to head to New York and do some acting. And his father's like, can you stick around and help us start our new business, which is a tavern they bought called Sisson's Tavern down in Baltimore.
Start.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, figuring it would be just like a short-term kind of thing, get in, help with the family business.
A lot of actors work behind the bar.
They do. That's a normal thing. So he goes for the first day of work, and his dad just tosses him the keys and says, don't F it up, and walks away. And now he owns a bar.
Is this related to the Heavy Seas name, or just toss you in at the
end? Yeah, maybe that's it. Just you go right into the Heavy Seas, learn to swim. But yeah, so he ran it. He turned it into one of the premier beer bars in Baltimore at the time. Ended up converting it into a brew pub and was Maryland's first brew pub.
Yeah.
And then moved on and started Heavy Seas. And the culmination of his life's work, sponsoring Cleats and Cufflinks.
Little known story. Cleats and Cufflinks was the goal the whole time.
Yeah, yeah,
he had
exactly.
A dream when he was about five.
Yep, he didn't know what it meant. It involved a tiger hat and a couple dudes talking, and it was very confusing.
Something about Frisbee.
So what are we having here today? I'm gonna go ahead and open mine.
Well, so today we're having the Pounder Pils, and I will read the copy from the side here because I like doing that on beers. Named for the weight of their shot, the most common naval cannons were called, quote, six-pounders. At Heavy Seas, that means a six-pack of crisp, clean Pounder Pils. That's a solid pour.
Yeah, yeah. You got a nice pour on there, nice color. Liking that. So we want to say, you know, thank you to Heavy Seas. We'll be enjoying this as we talk to you today. And we want to remind everybody out there, of course, when you're consuming Heavy Seas beer, do so safely, responsibly. Don't drive afterward. I don't know about you. I'm walking home, so it should be fine.
I'm taking the train.
Train, so yeah. We're in good shape there. So just our disclaimer and our reminder to everyone out there, enjoy your Heavy Seas beer responsibly. Speaking of enjoying beer responsibly, you were down at Fool's Fest.
Fool's Fest.
Obviously at Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Yeah.
Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Yeah, which is also the location of multiple regionals and what have you for the club division.
That's a tasty pilsner. I like that. So down in Fredericksburg, Virginia, nice fields. I've played there a number of years.
A handful of times.
Yeah, but I haven't played there in a while. You had good weather this weekend.
Yep.
And
fantastic weather, actually, considering the forecast.
Yep, yep. Which is not always the case at Fool's. I've slogged through some mud down at Fool's Fest before. But most importantly, it provides some context to your getup. So you play... Tell us about your team.
I played with Calvin Ball this past weekend.
Yep.
Calvin Ball jersey. We're all number 16. Calvin Ball established in 1985. We've got Calvin, Hobbs... some mallets for your Calvin Ball and a volleyball, which is also a key Calvin Ball component.
I love Calvin Ball.
And the team is comprised mostly of people who either still live in New York or used to live in New York and don't really have the opportunity to play together. So they play on separate club teams. They have graduated and don't really play anymore, all that sort of thing. So it's sort of a reunion team, get together, have some fun, drink some, play a little bit, come up with some goofy rules. So this is about the eighth year, I want to say, that team has been there,
mm-hmm.
but it's been under different names. This is the second year that we've been Calvin Ball, and the whole idea with Calvin Ball is that you get to make up rules that you then get to use in Ultimate. So in Calvin Ball, you can make up any rule.
Yeah, essentially the only rule of Calvin Ball is that you can't play by the same rules twice.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And that's key for us.
Yeah, no sport is more disorganized.
and that's a selling point.
It's a Hobbes quote.
One of the first rules that we obviously started using was the pick six, where if you intercept a pass on defense, you can attempt to run it back to the other end zone.
Is that a two-hand touch situation?
It depends on who you negotiate with before the game. Okay. Usually it's a one-hand touch. We've played a couple games where it was tackle, but not real tackle, not like bone-crunching tackle.
Yeah.
More like just...
Wrap them up.
Yeah. See what you hit, hit what you see, that sort of
thing.
There
you go, heads up tackling. We're going to get into the Pop Warner program here.
Got to be defensive when you tackle, not offensive. And the key there was that by introducing this notion of introducing rules, we're not just paying homage to Calvin Ball, but we're also paying homage to part of Ultimate's history.
Yeah.
The captain's clause.
And this is a thing that I knew nothing about, by the way. I want to preface things. Now, again...
We don't leave you in charge of rules at the end of the
game. And
I
will also admit this. Like I played Ultimate at various levels for a lot of years, and I never read the rules, which made me a very bad referee.
And you're your own referee, which is an interesting place to put everyone in. And I'm the sort of person who, before I turn on a TV, I'll read the rule book that comes with the TV and see how many languages I can understand it in. if instructions came with matchbooks or screwdrivers, I would read those too, just to see how they differ. Yeah. So as soon as I started playing Ultimate, I read the rules over and over and over again.
I have read them since.
Yes.
I want to clarify.
But
I've read
the time,
them now.
Yeah.
But at the time, no.
So the captain's clause, which is in the introduction, it's literally the third rule in the rules.
Yeah, I believe you said
preface.
It's capital I, period, C, period. Yeah.
Section 1, section C, however you want to do
that. Look
that
up. Mm-hmm.
So the quote of the captain's clause is, "A game may be played under any variation of the rules agreed upon by the captains of the teams involved." It's very simple. All you have to do is get your captains to agree to whatever rules you want.
It's Calvin Ball.
And the key rule that we used over this whole weekend was we had one player on our team and one player on the other team who had to wear a Calvin wig.
Okay.
Shock of white, like blonde hair. Calvin mask, which does actually restrict your vision a little bit, we found out slowly.
And is an important part of the original Calvin Ball.
Yes.
That was one consistency in that game, was they always had the black eye masks on. Yep.
And we all decided to have hats instead of masks.
I see that.
Made by
one of my
teammates.
Let's talk about this hat for just a moment.
It was crocheted by a teammate of ours. We got up to about 20 or 25 of them. I'm not sure everyone got a hat, but just about everybody got a hat. And the best thing about them was that we were easy to find anywhere in the tournament because we were all wearing tiger hats.
Yeah.
So just look for the tiger hats.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, playing in them was fantastic. The ear flaps are excellent ear warmth in subpar weather. The top is very thick, very warm. Yep. It also breathes a little bit.
Well, the crochet, you got
exactly.
Nice separation. It's a wonderful hat.
This is my new house hat.
And what is it? Who made these hats for you?
Ann Silver, one of my teammates.
It's phenomenal.
I believe she plays on Bent, the New York women's team. Also an NYU alum, which is one of the ways that a bunch of us showed up on this team to begin with. Fantastic hat.
I love it.
So the rules were...
Yeah.
We had one player who had the Calvin thing, the
mask,
on both teams, and you also had to have a beverage with a Calvin tiger-striped...
Cozy,
whatever those are.
I think I go
so
Koozie.
You had to play one-handed,
yeah.
And if you dropped your thing, you then had to carry it with two hands, because obviously you weren't to be trusted. There were a couple situations where you had people drop them and then had to do it the rest of the way. But if you caught a score one-handed while being Calvin, you got 2 points. So, this made all of our games shorter.
Much
which
shorter.
Which was fantastic. Because to get to 15 points by twos is 8 scores.
Yep.
To get there by ones is 15. It's a much longer time.
Much longer. And much more of an investment.
And just to change the way the game is played a little bit, it's a lot of fun to do for Fool's Fest, but we quickly found out that if you tried to do this in any serious competitive way, it would totally ruin the game.
Yeah, the two-pointer is not a reasonable
thing
to have.
Because then every time you score a two-pointer on offense, you're essentially getting one hold and one break. And if you score a two-pointer on defense, you're essentially getting two breaks. So a team that will do anything other than force-feed their two-point scoring players is kind of at a disadvantage. So the way that you would try to do this in an actual Ultimate game, you'd have a two-point line or a two-point area or something like that, it would just shift the focus so much that I don't think a two-point rule or a run-back rule, for that matter, are appropriate for like competitive Ultimate. But a captain's clause lets you explore all of those varieties. So all of the other teams also had rules that they brought to all of these games this year at Fool's Fest, which is one of the fantastic things that we did, because you had to talk to your opponents beforehand. You had to figure out how all this was going to work.
Hammer out the
rules. Exactly. You had to talk about it, figure out who was going to do what. Some of the teams, we had an anchor. So you had an eighth player, but they had to be carrying an anchor, and only one of your teammates could move that person. So they had to stand still unless they were being dragged like an anchor. So you could play with eight, but it didn't really work that well. We had a couple other teams with two-pointers. We had pick sixes. We had pick sixes that were worth three if Calvin was running it back. We had to – one of the teams made you dance after you threw a goal or caught a goal, or the goal was negated, and it was a turnover. So within 3 seconds after scoring,
if you forgot to dance,
you had to dance. You had to celebrate. You were like forced to celebrate.
I'm a fan of that.
So you had to act like you had never been there before. And we actually had a goal given back because we didn't dance quickly enough.
Yes, and as you should.
They were expecting that I wasn't going to be able to break out my moves, but I was dancing before it was caught.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking off the field in style.
Preparing the dance.
We had one of the teams made us... made one of our best players eat a 6-inch sub at halftime. And to be fair, our guy thought it was a race, so he tried to eat it as quickly as possible, and only midway through did they tell him that it was not a race at all.
Not a race, you just had to eat it.
This player also got skied for the game-winning goal by our opponents by about this much. It was a 17-16 loss to another podcast, the Sin the Fields crew.
We lost to the Sin the Fields crew.
It was a fantastic game, though. 17-16.
Sin the Fields won. Cleats and Cufflinks, zero.
Yeah, we're gonna have to come up against that. I could have used a couple more, MLU players, but we played against the MLU-ish team later on. They were Weekend at Bernie's. So they dressed somebody up on the opposing team as Bernie. So you get to choose a sport coat. You get a white shock of hair. And when you marked, you had to do the Bernie.
Yeah. If you can't see that,
They chose me as the Bernie. So we set up a specific defense where I had to mark all of the time doing the Bernie. Their Bernie apparently was just asleep on the sideline, so he didn't have to do the Bernie.
Because he was literally being Bernie.
So there's this whole, Fool's Fest is kind of the end of my competing season every year, so it's a nice cap to the end of that. It was nice to explore the rules with our team as well as with other teams and just see how all of that played out. We were there for as much fun as we were there to win, obviously.
Obviously.
There were a lot of very good players doing very silly things.
That's what it's about. This weekend. It's a fun tournament. That's a good thing.
And there were also a lot of really good players doing a lot of really awesome things over the course of this weekend. Throwing two-pointers, throwing three-pointers, coming back from serious deficits by the strength of the two-pointer. It was great. It was a great time.
And the interesting thing about it is this captain's clause thing, too, because you don't see that put into use very often. But if you take that as it's written, and you've brought this up before, if you take that as it's written, essentially you could say, let's have an ultimate game, and then play pretty much whatever game you wanted.
Not even pretty much, just literally any game.
Just literally any game you wanted.
You could play
golf.
Anything.
As long as both captains agree that that's the terms under which you're competing.
Precisely.
You could play anything. So, in the end, every game is ultimate.
Or ultimate is every game.
Indeed.
I'm not sure which one is more accurate or useful, but the way the rules are written for the USAU, everything is ultimate. And I like that idea.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that you can change the game to suit what it is you and your opponent want. We actually didn't reduce the stall count in any of our games, but that was something we talked about a lot, like reducing the stall count down to six instead of 10. Oh, well, yes, but not everyone could agree to three or so.
I would love to try that sometime. I would like a really sized stall count. I think that would be a lot of fun.
The 10-second stall count in actuality is forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Players who get worried when they have a 10-second stall count are players not to be trusted. But that's me.
That's you. That's you. all right, well... I'd love to hear from people out there if you have other interesting rules we should experiment with. I think the office pickup games are going to have to start up again soon. So we'll do...
Are we going to get an invite to those this year?
Oh, yeah,
I don't work in the office all the time.
Captain's Clause will be in effect for office pickups games, and mostly we'll just be playing darts because it involves less running.
Oh, that's too bad.
We just heard a loud noise in the background, and it reminded me that we're on location today. We're in a single camera shoot out in the kind of break room, conference room area, the coffee area, as you can see behind us.
I spend some time over there.
It's an important area. A lot of productive work gets done there. We're here because the production crew is pretty hard at work.
They're getting ready.
We have a season coming up, it turns out, in like a day.
Well, and change.
So let's talk about the weekend that we have ahead of us. So I'm gonna lay it out really briefly. So on Saturday, a lot of games on Saturday, maybe four games. You got Boston down at DC.
Yep.
We're starting the entire season with Philly at New York, which is why we're drinking out of our Philly and New York pint glasses, available in the MLU shop, you know, for those who need a good receptacle for their heavy seas. Then we have on the West Coast, Vancouver headed all the way down to San Francisco. Their new coach bringing his team down there to try his hand against the new staff down in San Francisco. It's going to be a lot of people who are brand new to the MLU game getting involved. A lot of good players who've been around, though, know what's up. And then we're going to have Seattle going to Portland for a rematch of that Western Conference Championship game.
Yeah.
Again, in Portland.
Very excited to see how that plays out.
Yep. And then we go to Sunday, and we have the game that you were talking about being most interested in, mainly because of its context. We have Boston coming to play Philly in what will be the second game for both teams of the weekend.
Yeah, so Boston plays two games on the weekend. Philadelphia plays two games on the weekend. And I'm not sure we've seen two teams play against each other on the second game of their respective two-game weekends. And it'll be seeing changes from the first day to the second day is kind of interesting in this context, as well as seeing what positions players are in who have been there for a couple of years, both for Boston and for Philadelphia. I don't know what's coming. And you'll see that in the brunch article that's coming up this Saturday, is that one of the worst things that you can do going into a season is load up all these preconceptions and have a predetermined notion of what you think all these players are going to do, what you think the teams are going to do. The best thing that you can do is walk into the season with open eyes and take in what you actually see, not what you think you're going to see. So the preview that I'm writing is mostly about what these teams have been historically, because this is kind of the last moment you can talk about that before the season starts, and then sort of setting the table for what they can achieve over 4 years after you add up their, you know, four seasons
four
together,
seasons,
right?
Yeah.
And then we see how they stack up that way, but this is the last moment we get to talk about the past a little bit, so we're going to recap that a little bit, look ahead. I'll be doing two games this weekend, the Boston game versus DC and the Boston game versus Philly. I'm very excited to be working with Jeff Poster again this year.
That'll be a good time.
I like the work that he puts in. He enables me to talk about the things that interest me a little bit more during the games, and he brings his own excitement to it. But, you know, it's really good to have somebody you work with in the booth be actually physically excited to be there. Like, it creates a better environment.
I mean, he loves being there. I mean, we saw his dance from the video. If you haven't seen the Jeff Poster dance video, we'll retweet that again so you can.
I'll put it this way: he's got more rhythm than I expected.
Yeah,
he's got a little bit. He's got a little bit
of
move to him.
Moves,
yeah,
loosens up.
I mean, I spent the weekend doing the Bernie, so
yeah, you're
what
ready.
Do I know?
The two of you are perfectly ready to go. So that brings us to the next point. So you're covering a game down in D.C. and you're covering a game in Philadelphia, and you know, we haven't made this announcement yet, but it's coming out today, so probably before this gets out to the world, that we've kind of made a little bit of a shift of focus in the way that we're covering games this year, where what we're going to be doing is basically live streaming all of our games. And, you know, over the past several years, we've live streamed half the games, a third to half of the games, depending on what kind of strategy or approach we were taking. And often the reason for that was we were investing a lot of budget and energy and personnel into the kind of broadcast style game. And we've seen this actually over the last however many years in Ultimate. There's been kind of an arms race over who can get this kind of broadcast look, who can mimic the kind of thing that we see on TV with the games. And that's been great. We've seen a lot of great experimentation with camera angles and commentary and graphics and replay.
It's in part the reason I'm here.
Exactly. And that's actually, I think, been really good for the game and has been really interesting in terms of showing the sport and showing how it can look. However, that's often been done at the expense of coverage, meaning the investment in putting three cameras on one field has left another two fields without any cameras. So often we see that we're, you know, while we may be delivering one cool product, we're missing games. And the thing that we came to the conclusion this year from looking at our numbers, how many people are watching different things, talking to fans, talking to players, talking to staff, is that the priority is a little bit off. The main priority, if you're a company based around a live sports product, is delivering that product live.
Keyword. Not product, not sports. Live.
Live. So we reprioritize a little bit. And so this year we'll be live streaming all of our games. Now, I want to put a caveat on that. This is, you know, new technology that we're using. It's a whole new setup we're using. And we're relying on connectivity at stadiums that is sometimes less than reliable.
Right.
So there will be times when we'll have some difficulties. There will be some streaming issues. I'm sure we all know that that's what happened. It happens to everybody. Even the NBC Sports, when I watch my Premier League now and then, has glitches and stuff, and they spend a lot of money on it. But in terms of our levels of priority, priority one is that live delivery of the game. And, you know, we'll still have announcers on all the games. We'll still have graphics. We'll still have all the basic stuff. But we're talking a single camera shoot, live coverage of the game.
And from my perspective, that's exactly what I want as a person who watches live sports. I know I'm obsessive about sports, and I will go back and watch games that I've seen before, and I'll go back and check out things that I'm looking for cues and offenses or defenses or whatever. But the thing that I always want is I want to watch it as it happens, because it only happens live once, and that's the reason that you're engaged. That's the way you get surprised at times. That's the way you get caught up in the moment. You lose sort of that day-to-day thing, and you get into that sports world.
Absolutely. Dan Vogel actually gave, you know, when I brought this idea to him, and he's our West Coast guru. He's been with the league since the beginning, and just a really smart guy. But I brought this up to him, you know, that this was the move we were thinking about making. It would mean less multi-camera coverage, more focus on the live delivery. And he said something that I thought was great. He said, I've watched some of the most dramatic moments in the MLU history play out on Twitter, which is a lot lower fidelity than a single camera.
Yes. As someone who was filling up the Twitter feeds in about 2013,
yep.
I'm happy to have helped.
Yeah, you definitely did that.
I'm a text-based life form, as it turns out.
Yeah, you're very text-oriented for sure.
Emojis, what's that? Come on, really?
Don't tell
the whole world.
Don't tell the whole world.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the shift is going to be good. I think that fans are going to really like it. And it's going to do a couple other things for us too, right? By streaming all the games live, we're streaming them back here to the main office and then back out to the world, all live, right? Cycling them through. We'll have statisticians not only in the field but also in the office. So we'll have more accurate stat keeping, which means better Fantasy Ultimate, better box scores that are updating live to keep track of, a lot better experience there. We'll have a better kind of overall second screen experience, you know, meaning the Twitter and Facebook and ability to put clips out during the game and pictures and things. We'll be able to tie that together more.
And that's perfect because I'm, again, someone who, when I'm at a sporting event, I'm tweeting.
Yeah, you're checking out what's going on.
I'm checking up on the stats. I'm trying to see if there's anything that I missed that other people are like, hey, check out this clip from the game that you are literally watching live.
That you're sitting at.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's that engagement level where it's not just a passive sitting and watching. It's an engagement with the audience a little bit more.
Absolutely. And we're going to be trying some new technology and new things in that mix so everybody can see how that's going to play out for us. And then lastly, something that's kind of near and dear to your heart is we think that this kind of coverage is going to make it easier for people to write about and report on Ultimate.
Well, there's two things on that. First is that it'll make it easier because it'll be live and they'll be able to follow it. So whether you're a media fan, blog, whatever, like any way that you want to talk or write about it, you can consume it and do that at the same time that the people who are doing it for MLU do it. So broadening that out a little bit. The second thing is that by streaming all of these back, My understanding is that it'll be easier to view just after the event happened.
Yes.
So for me, preparing what I'm going to write for the middle of the week, I can start as soon as I finish the job of announcing the game. And I can have my notes from the game in front of me and go back and watch the game again right away so that it's all fresh, so that I have a better idea of what actually transpired during the game, what were the ebbs and flows about. And if you're a stat head or somebody who goes back and watches things obsessively like I do, you can start that process earlier.
Yeah.
So when you talk to somebody about the game, you can have your prepared take as soon as they have their hot take. So you can be ready to talk about it.
Ready to come right into the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. You can tell I'm getting a little like...
You're getting excited about
this. I'm legitimately getting excited about not only this, but the season in general. It's kind of been creeping up on me, but now when I start to talk about it, it's my metacognition is kicking in there, and I'm excited.
You're talking about it. I like that. Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited too. There's of course always the attendant anxieties of attempting this. Right. I mean, let's be perfectly clear. This is a really big undertaking for us, and the production crew has done an amazing job, sort of building the technology that needs to be used to do this. You know, we're not a ESPN level production company. We're a very small organization.
I haven't seen the video truck roll up yet.
Yeah. The video truck is like a collection of economy cars that unloads a bunch of equipment from them. But at the same time, if we can accomplish this, I think it jumps us a level to where now we have a baseline to work from that's correctly prioritized. Hmm. We're delivering things live. We're letting people experience the game as it happens. And then we can start adding back in some of the other stuff we've been experimenting with over the years.
Yeah.
Things like replay could come back in. And they can come back in during the season. Like, this stuff is going to get added. We'll also still have some multi-camera broadcasts. We have a deal with Comcast and Philly in the Mid-Atlantic that makes it financially viable to produce a multi-camera game. So we'll be producing some multi-camera games for Comcast, which is exciting.
Broadcast TV.
This
is how my parents found out that what I sounded like when I was doing games was by catching me on CSN at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to be on TV. And I think sometimes people forget that was not an easy deal for us to get.
Most of us don't know how that happened.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think internally we forget.
Right.
But it was a tough deal to get. We got a good relationship with those guys, and we have an opportunity to expand that relationship too. Yeah. So hopefully we'll be in more areas and more cities in the coming year. Which brings me actually to something I wanted to talk about. So, hey, go MLULive.com. You can check out the live streaming stuff. Go there. It will have whatever games are coming up on the weekend will be embedded there, and then you can also see the full schedule below it. So everybody get out, MLULive.com, check it out. But it does remind me that, you know, as we're finishing up the show today and as we're going into the season, you know, I think the question that I wanted to ask you is, what are you excited about? You don't have a lot of time to answer, but what are you excited about? Let me see here. I'm going to check my thing. We got about 2 or 3 minutes left.
Well, you know, so I could take all of that time if I wanted to, but I'll answer it with a couple specific things that I'm excited about.
Now,
we'll see what you can come up with.
All right.
The top thing that I'm excited about, and this is the same every single season, it's the creativity of the players.
Mm-hmm.
Every single season, there are players that I didn't know could do the things that they do on the field. There are players who show up in spaces where they're not really supposed to be based on their strategy or whatever, doing the right thing anyway. And there are throws that you didn't really expect. There are cuts that don't make any sense. There is defensive plays that come out of nowhere. And then there's the things that you literally cannot prepare for. Like the opening week last season, Timmy Person beat a guy deep that was giving him a 10-yard cushion. It's a 50-yard sprint,
yeah.
And he's given the guy a 10-yard cushion, and he beats him. I didn't expect to see that at any point in the season, and it happened the very first week. The second thing is just the divergence of coaching strategies and the different sort of tactics in-game and out-of-game that the different coaching staffs use. I think we're seeing more and more divergence as the seasons have gone along, as we've gotten away a little bit from what we brought to the MLU,
right?
And people are starting to build things specifically in the MLU. So divergence of strategies, creativity of players, and being surprised. Every time that I'm surprised during an MLU broadcast, that's why I'm there. Like, that's the whole, like, the moment where I'm searching and fumbling for words, that's the moment, like, that's the whole reason that it's there. That's the whole reason that I enjoy doing it. because I'm not often at a loss for words.
No, that does not come up with any kind of regularity.
So what are you excited about?
It's interesting. So obviously you get excited for seeing the game on the field. You know, I'm going down to D.C. this weekend to catch that game, and I'll be back up here in Philly afterward. That's always exciting. I'm excited to see the live streams work and watch more of the West Coast games, because I have trouble watching tape delayed games. I'm not good at it. But I will watch those West Coast games, which is exciting. But really, I think if I were to take the kind of more business, more cufflinks perspective, one of the things I'm really excited about is the way the organization has developed over this past offseason, and the fact that once we hit sort of game one of the season, the work that goes into the season had better be done.
Yes.
Which means that on Monday morning, I get to start thinking about 2017, which is really kind of cool in a way, right? And it's different than it's been in the past, where we've been more subsistence-based in a lot of ways. But now we have the, you know, we have great staff in place. We have good staff on the ground with these teams. And it frees us up to start thinking about things further and further out. And the more you can do that, the more we can plan for where we want to take not just the MLU, but kind of the financial direction of the sport, and how we can incorporate these sponsors and these other partners and broadcast deals and all this stuff that we can work on that has very long time frames. You want to close a big sponsorship deal, that's a year. You know, it's 2 years. You want to close a broadcast deal, it's years. And so you have to be working on those well in advance. And having the kind of stability we have now and having the kind of staff and people we have, I'm really, really excited. And it seems weird to be excited about 2017 and 2018, but I am.
That's where it all builds to, though. I mean, that's sort of the arc that we're working on here. And the fact that we've been able to prove that Ultimate can attract sponsors and can get involvement not only from sponsors but from communities and engagement and all of that. Like, now we're at the point where we've shown that we can do that a little bit.
Yep.
Where does that go next? Where does that lead us?
That's an exciting thing to find out, isn't it?
Yes, all right. Hopefully.
Well, we're out of time today. Thank you all for joining us. You can, of course, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Nick Darling. It's N-I-C Darling.
At DustTweetR, DustTweetR.
Or, of course, at Cleats Cufflinks. And, you know, we'll be back again next week, hopefully with some resounding stories of Dusty being surprised by great plays on the weekend, and maybe a little less Tiger Hat.
This is maybe. This is a nice, clean Pilsner. I recommend it. It's fruity. It's balanced.
Yes.
And aside from that, shout out to Calvin Ball. Shout out to Ann Silver for the hat.
Amazing.
This is fantastic.
Amazing.
I'm going to wear this as many days as I can.
So get out to some games this weekend. Get tickets if you're in one of the cities. If you're not, tune in to MLU Live. And we'll see you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.